You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Welcome back to another edition of The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. And this is a special one because we have finally arrived at the Final Four. Absolutely amazing times here in Gowanus. I arrived last night. The atmosphere is incredible. You can just feel the energy everywhere we go. We're going to start this a special crossover at the Final Four with a look back a little bit to the season, and most importantly, a look at the semifinal games that are coming up on Friday night. And of course, I can't do this alone. I got to bring some special guests. I haven't done a show alone by myself ever, so why do it now? Figured I'd bring three people along with me. Number one is an active player in today's game, Mr. Jake Cohen from Maccabi Play Tika Tel Aviv. Also, the Players View host with Michael Roll. Jake, I want to welcome you to the crossover.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's really cool to do this. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. We need somebody that's been there, you know what I mean? But that was living in it this season, because we have someone that's been there, kind of like me. That's my next guest, the EuroLeague legend and ambassador, the two-time EuroLeague champion, Maccabi sports director, and I get to call him actually a kind of a good friend, you know. Whenever we get together, there's a whiskey and a cigar, and, you know, we sit down, we talk about things. He even got me in trouble when I did the crossover with him, because we actually did it. It's the only crossover I did from a bar. Nikola Vucic, how are you, my man? How are you? Everything good?
Great, great. Good to see you again. And I know it's not in my bar, but we can do it on Zoom.
Yeah, but we couldn't get Jake and Denise to come with us. You know, that was the problem.
Yes.
I would have done it.
I know you would. You're already there.
Me too, definitely.
And there's that voice from behind. And that's Denise Askel, who will also be joining us here today, a TV journalist in Istanbul in Turkey, and works the NBA, works all over the world. I kind of wish I had her job sometimes, and hoping that she doesn't take mine. Denise, welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the crossover.
Hi, Joe. It's a pleasure for me. And I think you're so much better than me. Not only from my perspective, you're definitely so much better than me. So I don't know who has to do emphasize sometimes.
Thank you very much. You definitely look a lot better than me, that's for sure. I don't know if I'm better than you or not, but you look a lot better than me.
Thank you. Let's
just jump right into it. And let's talk about the 34 games of the season. And I'm just going to throw this out at each one of you instead of giving a name right now. Maybe I'll pick names as we go along when we talk about the semifinals. But let's start with the 34 games. The 34 games of the regular season, I feel like I say this every year, were the most amazing 34 games that I've seen throughout the season. And this year, I think it just took it to another level. What do you guys think as far as what that regular season was like?
Well, this is my seventh year playing in the EuroLeague, and I can't remember a season that was this competitive. Right from the beginning, the level was just super high, and then I feel like there was no lull at all. You know, every week seemed to be getting better and better. The competition got better, the teams got better, the players got better. And as we worked towards the conclusion to the playoffs, you know, getting that seeding and everything, the race was just so close. There were, 10 or 11 teams going into week 33 or round 33. So just incredible competition in the regular season. And if the quarterfinals or the playoffs are any indication, this Final Four is going to be something special.
As you talked about that, the four teams that made it to the Final Four that finished in the first four were pretty much there the whole time. They were just kind of battling it out. But from 5 to 13, as you said, was crazy. And you know, we say on TV and the EuroLeague phrase of every game matters. I just don't think it ever meant more than it did this season.
Yeah, it's crazy how true that motto turned out to be this year. When we were looking back, when we were in that playoff hunt, we were looking back at games that we had not played well, that we had lost. Like, man, you know, that game was so important for us. You know, if we had just won that game, you know, who knows how we'd be sitting right now. So, yeah, absolutely, that's true. And I think it's a testament to how good this league is, how good these players, coaches, organizations, and fans are, that we get something like this every year. It's truly incredible, and it's a real treat to be a part of.
Denise, from your side, obviously you follow the whole EuroLeague, but you're more known, as I'm known for in Spain, you're more known in Turkey, you know, in Istanbul, and following those teams. What was it like? Because there was such a, you know, there was such a difference, kind of like a change in of the guard this year, as Anadolu, you know, they didn't perform up to their potential that everybody expected them to. And Fener, you know, with a brand new team and with Coach Itudis there, kind of took a step up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Joe, I remember me and Ibrahim Kutlay, you know, EuroLeague legend. We have a Nesine. It's a Nesine is a EuroLeague sponsor, global sponsor, betting company. We have a show for Nesine, betting company, and we every week on Monday we sit down and we talk about the games. All right, and each week we cannot understand what just happened and what's gonna happen, and we're like, all right, hold on. So last week, again, Asvel against Barcelona, Asvel won. So this week, Barcelona is playing against Maccabi, but you know, it's nothing is for sure. So it's like everything was unbalanced, and we loved it because, as EuroLeague phrase, every game matters. Every game really mattered this year, and it's been a pleasure for me to do all these shows, and especially as you mentioned for Turkey, Anadolu Efes and Fenerbahce. Nobody would have expected Anadolu Efes to be in this position with Ergin Ataman, Will Clyburn, and Shane Larkin, Vasile Mistic. But when you look back, the whole picture, there were so many injuries. So many injuries. And there were so many ups and downs, new additions. So I think it's just also the other teams were going up. Maccabi, as you know, Jake, I think you would inform us more than I can. But, you know, you were surprising. Maccabi was surprising us. Panathinaikos, like, you know, those two games against Aspa and Panathinaikos last minutes because of Will Clyburn, Anadolu Efes won. Like, nothing with Alba Berlin game, for example, Joe. Like, every game mattered. So we came to a point as Anadolu Efes, we're like, okay, we're out of the playoff. All right, so like, what shall we think? You know, okay, because every game matters. So you know, that's the thing.
Nicole, as a sports director and working for Maccabi, how frustrating is for you what Jake was saying? Like, you look back and you see those games and you're like, man, I can't believe we lost to those guys at home. You know, I can't believe, you know, the one play that made a difference. And we know in a 40-minute game that not one play, even if it's at the end of the game, makes a difference. There's so many things that happen during the game that lead you to that moment. But how frustrated is it for you? Because there was one point, I remember I was talking to somebody from the club, and you were in sixth or seventh place, and you were like that typical two games away from 15th place, and one game away from third place, and you had, I think it was Anadolu, Fenerbahce on the road, and somebody else, like in consecutive days. And I was like, man, if you guys go 2-1, you're all right. And I think you went 3-0 in that stretch. What's the, those moments have to be so intense?
Look, this EuroLeague is not, if you see on the end, it wasn't every game matter, it was every point matter. That's how crazy it was. You know, we lost in Žalgiris by 1 point, and we were so happy because we should. If we lose only by 1 point,
that's right.
We qualified. You remember?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were aware that this season can you cannot not look anything forward than 1 week, because like you said, you can lose one game and you drop down to 14th place, and you win one game, you go up to 5.
Right.
Most important was to be, you know, to stay, not to go to euphoria, not to go to depression after win or loss, because it's coming next one. This was, I think, our key, that we didn't have the mood swings so much during the season. We stayed focused every game, going, you know, prepare for next one. And that's how we raise up. But like you said, every week was stressful because, you know, it wasn't only that you depend on yourself. You know, we all expect, let's say, Efes that will start. You know, they usually give us always 5-6 games, you know, advantage, and then they're chasing us.
Yeah.
You know, but this year they didn't succeed to catch us. But then you have, you know, Milano. You see, watching Milano, you say, okay, guys, Milano is coming, it's coming. But, you know, you all the time you have some kind of fear behind your back that one of these teams that, you know, that they are great rosters, they're going to, you know, start up the engine. But fortunately, they had injury problems, and And I think the teams that went to not top 8, top 12, they were like every game was so important till the point difference.
My favorite team to talk about, even though you had Cervera Vesda, like you said, Milan at the end of the season was coming on. I mean, they started a little bit too late to get their rhythm. But Baskonia was a team that unbelievably didn't make it into the playoffs. Not that the playoff series could have been any better, but yeah. They could have made it even a little bit better. You know, I mean, if they come in and instead of Žalgiris, and they play Barcelona, maybe it's a whole different, you know, playoff series for Barcelona.
Yeah, listen, I think it's already amazing that we had three out of four games went to game five. That's how equal was this from first to seventh place. Sorry, second to second, seventh place. But, you know, Barcelona had the only team that was, fortunately, you know, the sweep it in these three games. But even if you see this game, Žalgiris fight to the end.
Yeah,
it wasn't easy. So I think all eight teams were, you know, well deserved, and we had a great, great playoff series.
And the playoffs were amazing. I mean, we could talk about the playoffs for an hour, but I want to get your. I'll ask Jake, because Jake went through the playoff, and maybe he doesn't want to talk about it right now. And Nicole, as you know, and I know that. It's harder to talk about it 30 years later also, because it doesn't matter how long it's been. You know, these losses always hurt. But Jake, how intense was that five-game series going through? You know, in Monaco, you guys won that first game. And tell me a little bit about the up-and-down emotions, because then you won by 30-something in game four, which was crazy. And then the fifth game, you guys jump out to a big lead early on. What was that like with living it?
Yeah, like you said, the wound is still a little fresh, but
yeah. Hey, Jake, we can let you know that the scar doesn't make you feel any better 20 years later. It'll always be with you.
I'm fully aware. I lost on a buzzer beater in March Madness, and I still can't talk about it. So yeah, I know exactly. This is right up there with that.
Hey, they say the losses that what makes us build more character and become better players, right?
Yeah, well, I should be great by this point then. No, this quarterfinal was amazing. I think Nico touched on it a little bit, that a lot of the success we had this year was because we were able to stay focused and stay even keeled. And at a place like Maccabi, that's a lot easier said than done, because you have such great tradition of success here that there's a lot of pressure every night to win games and to make the fans proud and all that. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to Coach Katash for leading that charge and keeping us focused and not getting too high or too low. And even within the series, you know, after game one, our focus didn't change. Despite winning game one on the road, that we really wanted to continue to play well and win games. But we knew that Monaco was a really talented team. And I think in that first game, they shot like 20% from three or maybe even less. That's not super likely to happen again. So it was just a really big battle between two really good teams. The level of play was really high. The physicality was really high. The shot-making ability was really high. The performances we saw from Wade Baldwin, from Mike James, from Jordan Lloyd, from Lorenzo Brown, you know, just to name a few, were incredible. And, you know, even though it really hurts me that we didn't advance to the Final Four, I try to keep myself focused on the positives, to be grateful to even have that opportunity. To be a part of a team like this was something really special for me in my career, to have teammates like I had, to have coaches like I had, to have, you know, the front office behind us like we had. It's really special. And, you know, when you look at it from the point of view of being thankful, being grateful for that, it does make the sting a little bit less, because you get to appreciate just how fun the ride was. And thankfully now we get a little bit more here with the domestic competition to finish. But that quarterfinal was something I'm going to remember for a long, long time. I'm going to be thinking about the shots I missed for a long, long time, the defensive assignments I missed as well. But, you know, that's the nature of the game. And Monaco definitely is a dangerous team moving forward.
And so some of that answer, Jake, sounded scripted. You have that written down in front of you or what?
No, that's just off the top of the dome. You know, player's view has me really sharp these days. You know, I'm used to the.
That's like those questions that Denise and I ask at the at halftime, and it's like, yeah, we just have to do one play at a time. You know.
Well, as someone who's done those halftime interviews as well, I'm trying to get out of there as quick as possible. I don't want to say anything right or wrong. I don't want to give the other team anything. So I totally understand those answers. But here with you guys, you know, it's a great chance to reflect on what we went through and to share with the fans some of the things that go through our minds.
Hey, the only other playoff I want to touch on real quick, and then we'll move over to Denise, is with you, Nico. You were in the middle of yours, obviously. Did you get a chance to watch the Real Madrid-Partizan five-game battle, so to speak?
Well, we played at the same time, so I didn't lively, but I watched after. And unbelievable. Look, it's also what's happened there. It's changed some momentums. But listen, overall, basketball-wise, leave the incident on the side. It was great basketball and very, very competitive. You know, it's, again, first seed against eighth seed, you know, battle to the fifth game. So
yeah.
What better you can expect?
That's right. That's what I want to talk to Denise about. Then we'll jump into the semifinals. Denise, you were a big part of the Fenerbahce series with Olympiacos. And yeah, Dimitris Sadoudis is one of my favorite coaches in the league. I think he's a class act. You know, some people say things about him that I, you know, sometimes I won't believe, but he's always been a class act for us in the press. And I think he's a great coach. And I think he proved it this year. And man, what a battle that was between Olympiacos and Fener.
It was a great challenge we witnessed, I think, because that was, as we all know, Dimitris Sitoudis' first year with Fenerbahce, with a club that is with a like highly basketball culture, sports culture, especially also coming from soccer culture. And the fans want always win, always being successful with from a coach who has this amazing career, amazing character in front of the fans. And then I think Dimitris brought that to Fenerbahce with the new, everyone was new. Mainly everyone was new in the team, and his crew, coaches, the players, new additions. For example, Joe Carson Edwards. This guy never played in EuroLeague, and he experienced the playoffs with Fenerbahce, and he was one of the most important players during the playoffs, who brought the momentum and energy on the court during the very critical moments. I think
was it game three or game four? He scored like 20 points in a row. It was crazy.
Game two, where Fener won in Piraeus.
Right.
So it was like, imagine his first experience with Fenerbahce and then imagine his performance. So it's, everything was great, you know, but when we look back, and I think the fans are still talking about this buzzer beater from their former player, Kostas Šuka. Incredible. But honestly, even coming to that point, before arriving to that buzzer beater, there was a help of Sasha Vezenko to his teammates. That was a lack of defense from Fenerbahce we witnessed. So there were so many other things that we could have talked before the buzzer beater. And obviously the game five, everything was clear. There was no crunch time. Olympiacos closed the page very quickly. And I think also playoffs is the place where vets' experience talk louder.
Yeah, that's what you said earlier is so important, because what I said to Nico before is like, you know, there's so many plays that lead up to that three-pointer, the Šuka's that yeah, it's the play of the year probably. It was called amazingly by my colleague Liam Kenny with the Kalanita. It was incredible, but there's, like you said, there's the plays beforehand that lead up to it that give Šuka's the opportunity. But the thing that kills me, Nico and Jake, you guys, Kostas Šuka's just continues to do it over and over again. And in the most important moments, somebody explained it to me. Number one is like, I've watched the play maybe 20 times. Nicola and Jake, you guys know, you switch everything there. But there was a quick instance where one of the players from Fener just, He didn't make that jump switch in time. And it was just that split second that Kostas needed to see the hoop. And how does he do it?
I don't think you can fault the defense at all there. I mean, it was such an amazingly contested shot. I think it was Nigel Hayes-Davis was like an inch or two away from blocking it even. So I think it's unfair to get on the defense for him making a shot like this.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not blaming the defense. Of course, everybody says I never played defense to begin with, so I would never blame the defense. But if you see the video, he just took that half a step backwards where he got on his heels just enough to give Kostas that opening. And you can't give that guy that opening.
Yeah, he's certainly made a habit of doing this sort of thing. He just seems to be one of these athletes that thrives in that situation. We've seen it, in different sports. We've seen it in basketball, certainly, with guys that just tend to make these kind of shots. Robert Horry comes to mind. Of course, the big names like Steph Curry and LeBron James, of course. But, even across other sports, there are just certain guys that in those moments, Tom Brady, Tiger Woods, they thrive. I don't know what they have in their DNA. I don't know. I've heard they have really low resting heart rates. Maybe that's the secret. They don't get excited. Who knows?
Maybe they don't eat tomatoes and strawberries.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever they've got going on, inside. Who knows? But he's absolutely one of these all time clutch performers. Proved it over and over again, and I'm sure he's going to get a few more opportunities to prove that coming up this weekend.
Hey, man, if you're putting Kostas Lukas up there with Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods, I'm going to let him know this weekend.
Yeah. So maybe he's going to be happy about that. Just like his clutch performances, man, have been crazy. I mean, how many times have he done that? He made a game winner on us, I remember, when he was playing for Fenner. That one still hurts a little bit. I know it hurts my boy Danny Avdija. But, yeah, it's just he's made a habit of it. He deserves the credit.
Let's get to the important part here. Let's talk about the semifinal. We're going to start with the Olympiakos and AS Monaco, which is going to be the first one. Talk to me about the road that each one of these had. Olympiakos was pretty much the first place team throughout the season. I feel when they play their best game, they're the best team in EuroLeague. I mean, I think Coach Bartsokas has them playing just an incredible type of basketball. They share the ball well. They defend well. They're the most complete team, in my opinion, throughout the season and obviously here in the Final Four. But they're playing against a team, against AS Monaco, that you and Nico know very well, that this is an unpredictable team. You never know what you're going to get. I mean, there's guys that could score 20 a game every game if you let them. And then you always have Mike James, the decider. Talk to me about a little bit about their road to the Final Four and talking about what you expect in this series.
Well, I think Monaco is a very dangerous matchup for Olympiakos. I totally agree with you that Olympiakos has proven their number one seed throughout the playoffs. They've been so consistent in front of a very difficult schedule. We talked about how hard this EuroLeague was this season, and they were a really high-level team seemingly right from the jump. So they absolutely deserve that number one seed. I know they're going to have a ton of fans there in Kaunas supporting them, which I think is going to be a huge advantage. But this Monaco team, I think, is a really dangerous matchup for them because they have guys who can just really score the ball in bunches. Olympiakos likes to switch a lot, and that can be really dangerous against scorers like Mike James, Eliakobo, and Jordan Lloyd because they really thrive in those isolation situations. And I think Fenerbahce showed in that quarterfinal that there are certain ways to attack Olympiakos. There are some cracks in the armor there. It's not like they are the clear favorite to win this thing. I think it's anyone's Final Four for the taking here, and I think Monaco is up to the challenge to give them a really good run for it. I think their defensive ability can slow down Olympiakos as well, having guys like John Brown and Alpha Diallo, who can switch really well and guard multiple positions. That's going to be dangerous too. So I think it's going to be a really fun game to watch from a tactical perspective, from a coaching perspective, from a player perspective, however you want to look at it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a really close game.
Nico, Olympiakos, I mean, obviously they have Azenkov, who's most likely going to be the MVP candidate this year, I believe. And I mean, he's had a fantastic season, but Fenerbahce did find a way to stop him. I think it was in game 4. He only scored 2 points, and And in game five, he was pretty ineffective also. In your opinion, is that something that Monaco has to focus on? I mean, of course, you stop his save off and you had to deal with Kostas Lucas making a couple of big shots and putting up big numbers. But they found a way to shut down Stasha.
Look, I think that Olympiacos, the biggest strength of them, it's a team game. Yes, Vezenkov this year jump out, but if you see through year, they had a few times some, you know, players were covering other players right. In the points. I think they have the best team in Europe as a group. Of course, when you have Kostas Lucas, Papanikolaou, you know, the guys that were in many Final Fours and they are cold-blooded in this situation, of course, this gives you some kind of advantage. But there is one thing with Final Fours, as you guys know, none of the first seeds ever won the EuroLeague. This is crazy statistic, but same as it's that 18 times we played the game number five and always won the home team.
Right.
So in EuroLeague, there is some kind of what he's saying basically is that now in Final Four, it's a game of underdogs. The most of the games that they were won, it's the games of underdogs. So it's extremely hard to predict. If I have to pick up somebody, of course, I pick up in this situation Olympiacos because of their experience in the team game. But it's coming one day of super, you know, Mike James and Jordan Lloyd can come in a super day and shoot from all over and score 30 points each. And, you know, you can just applaud them. So very hard to predict. Again, if I have to choose, I choose Olympiacos only because of their long time together and understanding this competition.
Well, good, because when I ask for prediction, now I don't have to ask you. You've already told me.
Done.
Denise, like as I said before, you got to see a lot of Olympiacos in the playoff series, and what's your opinion about this semifinal matchup, the first one on Friday night?
Well, first one on the Friday night, Olympiacos against Monaco. These two teams faced also with each other last year during the playoffs, right before the Final Four. And I think we should underline one specific player who played last year in Olympiacos that led them to go to Final Four, who is Tyler Dorsey, especially his performance during the last quarter of the game. And so I think the tension will be the same level of the game five of last year. And when we look also this year, when these two teams faced each other, Monaco won those two games. So I think they also, as a group of player, as you guys said, they are more organized. They have a system that which is very clear, and they're the number one team. But when we look at the Final Four atmosphere, who takes the risk? Who makes more open shot crates with the huge creativity would have more advantage than, from my perspective, than a team who has more system. And who has a better offensive play will also take the lead. So I think it's going to be very interesting, very, very exciting. And I think my prediction will be also for Olympiacos, no matter what. No matter, everyone says Mike James, Jordan Lloyd, Ellie, John Brown, okay. But Olympiacos has been here many times, and I think they can also take these risks, especially with Kostas Lucas, and also maybe the Shek Metkisic, we shouldn't forget.
Well, I talked about Vezenkov real quick also, you know, possibly being the MVP this year. But if we all remember last year in the semifinal game against Efes, not only did he play probably his worst game of the season, he also had to jump out and guard Mišić on the last play. And that three stuck on top of him. So, I mean, I think it's like a redemption game for Sasha Vezenkov. You know, a lot of us as players say, oh, no, we don't remember those things. It's, you know, the next day is the next game, and we forget about it. But that's bullshit. I was not supposed to say that, but you definitely remember those moments. And Nico, what do you think about Vezenkov? You think he's going to come back and with a little bit of a vengeance in the semifinal after last season, or does that put too much pressure on him?
I don't think he's he's dreaming different dreams. I'm sure that he wants to
Yeah, because the other one was nightmares, Nico.
No. Listen, that you know how that game was incredible, and that shot, you know, you can also like a game like a shot of Slukas last night. You know, you can just you know, watch and pray. But usually goes in. I don't know. You know, these guys are really special with their navigation systems of these balls. It's incredible how the how they're writing the history with these shots. So, you know, you can just be, you know, show to your kids that you are in that frame, raise the hands up. But what can you do? It's, you know, it was written. So, look, he had an incredible season, really full of confidence. And if you see even game, you know, that he was struggling, he was having this one or two plays that they were important.
Yeah.
But I think that they have experience to come in this Final Four, focus on different things, not on what was. They were coming focused what they need to do. And Olympiacos is confident in this situation. I think they're going to have the biggest fan base there and to support them. So I think that we will see, first of all, for sure, we're going to see amazing basketball. Yeah. Both teams will come ready.
I got two Olympiacos, and Jake, I mean, you're gearing more towards the matchup thing, and I think that way also, that Monaco matches up really well against Olympiacos, as you were saying, with the switch in defense. Is that your prediction? Is Monaco your prediction?
I mean, I would have said Olympiacos as well for all the reasons, but I would not be surprised if Monaco wins the game.
Jake, that's not a prediction. That's
I know. I need to be careful here. I'm playing against these guys still. You know, I might see them again soon, so I got to be more careful than you guys. But I'll give my official prediction. I'll go with Olympiacos as well. I think I'm just a little bit more hesitant maybe than the other folks in the Zoom.
I don't know if you guys watched Ted Lasso, but I was watching it on the flight here, you know, the show on Apple, and they have an announcer, and he said, you know, I stopped making predictions because I get tired of being right all the time. So I'm going to take the position.
Exactly.
I like that. I was like, you know, if now on, when everybody asks me to make predictions, I'm going to say, I don't make predictions because I'm tired of being right and I ruin the outcome for everybody.
Good one.
So anyways, I'm going to go with you guys. It's a four-way thing with Olympiacos. I'm with you. Now let's move on to number two, semifinal. FC Barcelona against Real Madrid. I don't even know what to say about Real Madrid. I mean, is it luck? Is it skill? Is it desire? Is it the heart of a champion? Is it the three oldest guys in the league essentially stepping up in the fourth quarter of you know, the most important game of the season? This team was dead in the water, you know, going to Partizan. Yeah, the fight did some things to give a little bit more of advantage to Madrid than it did to Partizan. And that's only because of the depth of the bench. You know, Madrid's a much deeper team. But, you know, game three, they had it lost also. I mean, Partizan was there. And somehow or another, they survived. And in the fifth game, it was, you know, three guys that average about 36 years apiece, you know, that haven't essentially played most of the season. Rudy Fernandez was all over the place. And then when I looked at the end and I was looking at his stats when I was commentating the game, I'm like, how did he score 0 points? He had his ball on, he had his hands on like every ball in the field, you know? Hey, what do you guys think about this matchup between Madrid and Barcelona? Can this, I don't even want to, if I call it luck or call it, you know, this desire or whatever, can it continue for Real Madrid? Because they're going to be overmatched without Yabusele and without Gabriel Deck against Barcelona.
First of all, we have El Clásico. Classic.
Yeah.
It'll be more classic than this.
It doesn't matter who plays, does it? It's good Barcelona. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Look, Real struggled during the season also with injuries. And they had also some few new additions to the team that took them some time, you know, to fit Hezonja, Musa. But, you know, when it's time to play off, when you have a Tavares, and we are talking about Slukas and Vezenko, but they had a Lul also in that game that he scored last 8 points in the last few minutes.
Yeah.
So they have also their game winner. Tavares that you know, when he's playing, it's you know, Jake knows he's the best. It's very hard to come into paint, and he's covering so much space. It's changed the rhythm of the other team.
It's amazing.
But, you know, in that game against Partizan, you know, Partizan really did unbelievable series. That fight for sure hurts them most because they don't have such depth as Real, and losing the two main players from starting five, of course, it's for them is was a disaster. But you know, we need to give them credit for what they did. Now it's coming to the two monster teams of EuroLeague, classic matchup that I would give the advantage to Barcelona because they are they really performed good as a team, especially last month. And when you have players like Mirotic, Saturanski, Higgins, Kuric, all these guys that, you know, there were so many times in these situations, and they are cold-blooded as well. And without Jabuzele, without Dek, I think Real is a completely different team. But again, they have players in Real that in a certain day can, you know, in 2 minutes, three-point shots and change the game completely. Very, very hard to predict, but I go with Barcelona. So you can guys continue to talk.
You go real quick because I don't want to ask Jake this question because he won't answer me. He won't answer me the way I want it to be answered.
Yeah.
Do you feel that Sardes has a better feel for the team this year? Like the last couple of years, I feel like it looked like he was always under pressure. A lot of times publicly in the press, it seemed like he was blaming his team for not being motivated to play. I feel like he's slowly gotten rid of the player mentality and he's moving over to the coach's mentality now. Do you feel the same way, or is that just something that I'm seeing on my own?
I think that Charles has a one problem, that he's over motivated to succeed. He wants to drag everybody with him to the hell if they are going down. I think it's more that players start to adjust to him and to adjust his energy, because you know, in these situations you need to separate the voice, the yelling, the expression, the way of expression, and to focus on the goal, what coach is asking for. Doesn't matter how he expresses it. It's usually taking some time until players are adjusting to this voice, these sounds, this attitude of sound. So I think the more thing is that players adjusted to him. They see him doing his thing on the court, but they are listening. They are not reacting on his the way how he's doing it. And they're executing much better basketball.
Yeah, that's a good thing, because I don't see him changing anytime soon.
So. He is. He told me, that's me. I asked him, how, I, you know, it take the shape of voice to be able to, you know. But, you know, he is a school of Željko Obradović, and two of them, you know. When you're sitting with two of them, you know, you can just be quiet because two of them start to yell, you know, even on the drink. So this is, you know, this kind of mentality.
You just grab your chivas and you drink and let them talk. That's all. Denise, talk to me about the El Clásico that's coming up here, Barcelona from Madrid, and at Barcelona. I know Nico talked about before that you know, Zalgiris gave him a battle, especially in game two. Game three was a tough game also here in Kaunas, but you know, if you look at the three playoff series compared to Barcelona, you could say that Barcelona had the easiest path, let's say the cakewalk to the final, even though we all know that that's not true. If I say that tomorrow at the tip-off event, I'm sure Saros is going to get up and start yelling at me like he does his players, but anyways, they had the easier, looking from the outside in, they had the easier path, but does that make it an advantage for them against Real Madrid after that tough five-game series that Real had?
I think it's an advantage because also mentally they are in a better place after what happened during the game two to Real Madrid after that, you know, let's call it fight, let's call it mistakes, but Yabusele is not playing. Gabriel Deck injured. he's not playing. So for Real Madrid, as Nicola said, it's a huge, huge thing to not forget. And it changed the dynamic inside of the team, on the court, with the team's dynamic, team's performance. But obviously, we should never forget about Tavares. We should never forget about those three guys, the vets and Maria Rezonha, you know, these guys. But at the same time, when you look at Barcelona, during the season, they started the season in a very not like it was a blurry, you know, because of the injuries, because of the system, because how Saras wanted to create the system with the scenario of the injured players. I think he succeeded in a very, very good way. They finished on the second seed, and I think I agree with him. I'm going with Barcelona. Well, and by the way, I want to also tell this. I had an interview with Sertaç Şanlı, former Anadolu Efes and, you know, our national basketball player. And he said, Deniz, people think that Saras is like a very, you know, emotional coach on the court. He screams, he yells, he's sometimes being negative. But I love him as a friend because I feel like he's my friend off the court. Yeah. Like I feel like I can share everything with Saras. And I think he gives this idea, this sensation feelings to the players. So I think maybe what Nicola said, maybe that thrives the atmosphere inside of the team because of that, because he's different off the court and he's more friendly, maybe more than the other coaches.
But that's what I've always said about Selko. Selko drove me crazy for 3 years, but he always really drove me crazy between those four lines. You know, once the last whistle and the 1-2-3, equipo, whatever we said, everything was forgotten about, and he became a friend, you know, and that, I think that's an important part that Saras is maybe learning along the way. Hey, Jake, let me run to you real quick about this series because, you know, Nico talked about the fact that when Tavares cuts down the middle of that lane and you guys got to rotate on defense to come over and try to stop him, he's like a train wreck coming at you sometimes. It's difficult. But even though he had the 41, the point index rated in game three, the 30 point index rated in game four, it was Williams-Goss who stepped up with 20 points plus the big three-pointer. It was Adam Anga in game four who had 15 points in the first half. And then, of course, in game five, we talked about the veterans who stepped up as kind of like a trio. You know, again, you can't win a game by yourself. Batman always needed Robin. He never went out to get the Joker by himself. So who do you think is going to have to step up in the semifinal game against Barcelona to help out Tavares?
Well, you mentioned a lot of them, but, you know, we're in the Final Four here. There's no individual performers. All these teams are in this situation because they're excellent teams. You know, we can talk about first team All EuroLeague, second team All EuroLeague MVP, all we want. But unless the five guys on the court, those 12 guys on the bench, those coaches, those players, they work together for a common goal and get it done, then they're not in this situation. So individual accolades are one thing, but it's about playing together that's the most important. That's why these teams are in that situation, because they all recognize that. But I mean, you said it for Real Madrid. They have a bunch of weapons that they can go to. You know, Sergio Llull, like a fine wine, continues to get better. They've shown their value over and over again. They're playing at a club like Real Madrid for a reason. They're all excellent players. I think that, you know, you talked about Tavares on offense. I'm worried about him just on the defensive end. He changes your entire approach to how you can attack that Real Madrid defense. He seemingly takes away everything all at once. He's up there on the pick and roll, taking away the pull-up. He's back at the rim, you know, protecting against the alley-oop and the lobs and obviously blocking shots. So totally changes how you can attack that Real Madrid defense. And Barcelona is certainly going to have a tall task ahead of him. And the contrarian in me certainly wants to pick Real Madrid to go against the other two here, but I'm picking Barcelona as well. I think they're going to get it done this year. I think Saras' team is really clicking at the right time. I think we saw in that quarterfinal that they're a really, really thoroughly well-coached, good team from top to bottom. They have weapons at every position, and I think they're ready to take that next step. This game is going to be a lot of fun for so many reasons. It's a Clásico. It's Final Four. But I think Barcelona is going to get this one done.
All right, we got three Barcelonas. I'm going to refrain from this one, but I'm more leaning towards joining you guys because I feel as though, not because of the better team or whatever, I feel as though that, as you said, Jake, they've had a more consistent season, and I feel as though Madrid almost has to have that feeling like we've done the impossible. You know, we've gotten here, which was, you know, as of 10 days ago, it wasn't going to happen. So I think there might be a little bit of a letdown, even though we say, it's impossible to be let down in the final four. But anyway, so we pretty much have unanimous decision on Olympiacos, unanimous on Barcelona, which makes my final question for each one of you, give you a couple minutes each to go take over the championship game, since we're not going to do that this season. So give me Olympiacos versus Barcelona in the finals. Give me a prediction. What's going to happen at an MVP? Let's start with Denise. Nico, don't worry, man. We're almost finished. I went with Denise to give you time to think about it, my man.
Thank you.
I think Barcelona, Joe.
Barcelona the winner.
Yeah, I think Barcelona. And you know why? I think also this guy will step up. La Previtola. I really think. And I think he might get the MVP award.
Look, for Nico, for Jake, you see how easy that was? You don't have to make this complicated.
This is experience. One plus one is equal to two. She did it very nice.
Wait, of course, Denise has to go pack some dresses and get on a plane, so she wants to hurry up and get out of here. So
I've done already. I've done packing, but this is what I strongly think and believe because of what I've seen during this year, during the season from him and from Barcelona. I think they will be the champions of 2023 of
Europe. Denise is going to learn, and now that she's on the crossover with me, that everything is open. So I want you to know that we talked about the weather here beforehand. That Denise doesn't know that there's an app on the phone to check the weather. And I just looked, girl, and it's going to snow tomorrow. So bring something really, really warm.
he's lying. Don't fell in trouble.
I won't listen to him. No, I've done already. I closed the luggage, so I packed summer clothes. So even if it's gonna snow, I'm gonna get Joe's jacket. So
there you go. Yeah, okay. I brought a EuroLeague snap jacket. That's the only one I brought with me. So that's all you.
Perfect.
Nico, you're up.
I
probably should go Jake first because he's going to give me some politically correct answer again. I think Jake's running for mayor somewhere. I'm not sure where it is. So let's go to Jake. I'll save you for last. Jake, you go first.
I agree with Denise. I think Barcelona is going to win it this year. I think it's correct me if I'm wrong. I think it's the third time for Charles here. I think third time's the charm. I think that team is really dangerous, really deep. They have so many weapons. Denise talked about Labriola. He's been excellent. That connection with Vesely.
You guys are messing me up. I've been working on his name for like 4 years. And now you guys.
Labriola.
Labriola.
Okay. We'll go with that. I think Satoransky has a chance to have an excellent Final Four. He is a gamer. He seems to play great in these big games. I love his game. But my MVP is Mirotić. I think he is an excellent player. He's going to take advantage of this spotlight. And he is my pick for MVP. And I'm with Denise. I'm going Barcelona as the champs this year.
High five.
Jake, I got to throw this out, man. Mirotić has had some difficult games and some big moments.
That's true. But what one thing I really respect about him is he always keeps going. He keeps shooting. It doesn't seem to faze him at all. He's also made some big-time game winners. I remember that beautiful up-and-under he had on the baseline to win a game a few years ago, post fadeaways to win games. So that's going to happen to anyone in that situation. There's going to be good ones and there's going to be bad ones. But you know, I don't think it's only about him. I think the team that he has around him, the coach he has behind him, I think they're in an excellent position to get this done against a shorthanded Real Madrid. And then I think they're going to ride that momentum and bring themselves the title.
I just got a message that popped up from Pablo, who you guys have all talked about coming in here. And he says, Mirotić had a 40 valoration in the semis last year. I'm like, yeah, but that was I feel like, yeah, that was the semis. that's the most important game. That's, you know, that's not the most important game.
Well, we'll see. I mean, all our picks have been so similar. We're all going to look really silly when it's Monaco, I know, right? Against. Yeah.
Hey, if anybody from Barcelona watches this, they better be really nervous. Nico, your turn, my man.
Well, my heart is split between these two. You know, Olympiacos is my club. You know, I love these people. And on the other side, I have a shadow that is my great friend. And it's emotionally, it's not, it's hard for the, you know, to decide. For sure, on one side, Charles is playing at home. Don't forget this. He's going to have a huge support of fans. Charles is the legend of Lithuania. Jakubaitis is also there. So they will give a local, very good local support. And I think the atmosphere will be able to match with the Olympiacos one. So I'm really expecting their, great battle until the last moment, like all the EuroLeague, like all season EuroLeague was. So the players that can decide this kind of games, it's, because we pick up Barcelona, so we have to take MVP from Barcelona. I would say that, there is a player in Barcelona that I really, he step up in the past. With this kind of games, it's a Higgins. It was in different teams. We cannot forget him as also as a guy that can really change the game.
I like that. Going out, being a little bit different. I like that.
Yeah. I saw him. I saw him taking the decisions. You know, he was in CSKA before, and he's a guy that you cannot forget in these moments. But again, there is few players that can really, come and step up. And like, of course, La Provitola is a player, same for the big games. You don't see him for a few months and then suddenly, come in and win the games.
Higgins always seems so like calm and under like control, he's got the same face in the beginning of the game that he does at the end of the game.
That's the most dangerous ones.
Yeah.
They come for these kind of games and they execute. But as you see from all our stories, we're expecting really amazing Final Four. And even we went with the same predictions because, we went by the logic and some things that they are. But again, don't forget, this is the game of underdogs. And also Barcelona will beat Olympiacos only because Olympiacos finished first.
Essentially, what we figured out here today is the championship is going to be AS Monaco against Real Madrid.
Yeah, if there's anyone out there that wants to bet, just bet against us because we jinxed it for sure.
Hey, my last comment is going to be, because we're running out of time here, my last comment is going to be, there was one point in between game four and game five where we almost had Olympiacos, Partizan, and Maccabi Tel Aviv in the Final Four. I don't know that hurts you guys to listen to, but can you imagine what Kaunas would have been like if those three fan bases showed up here?
I was telling my wife,
I'm like, buy 10 tickets. And we'll,
you have no idea what was the pressure on me, on my staff, after we won the first game in Monaco. People were buying tickets, booking hotels already. I tell guys, listen, it's the first game. What? No. That's it. I was like, my God.
That would have been crazy. I will never forget 2014 Milan Final Four atmosphere.
Incredible.
Because of Maccabi fans.
Yeah. I mean, the whole stadium in 2014 was yellow.
Yellow. That was yellow. Yeah.
That is the biggest mystery of EuroLeague. Diego from EuroLeague. I told him after we qualified to final. I told him, Diego, it's coming 10,000 Israeli fans from all over Europe. Tell me what 10,000? You have 2,000 tickets. Tell him, I didn't tell you how many tickets we have. I tell you how many people will be inside. Tell me, no way. And then before the game, we had a carousel. People were coming from the Piazza Duomo to the hotel. And they were like saying, it's like 10,000 people walking to the streets.
Yeah, that is
Diego
true.
Was like, they said, well, how are they going to come in? And then before the game, Diego told me, listen, all gym is yellow. Something is wrong here. How they came in? Anyway, We were full Jim Yellow. It is not only this. We had the same thing in 2005 in Moscow. That I remember entering the court. It was all Jim Yellow in the middle of Moscow. Yeah, this is the. But I expected the same thing to be with the Olympiakos now in Kaunas. Yeah. And Jim will be red, you know.
Last year in Serbia, it was like that with Olympiakos. It was a cool atmosphere because of their fans. So, you know, the fans are what make this thing amazing. And Denis, I can't believe in 2014 you were at a game. Were you old enough to go to a game by yourself then?
Of course, I was. You know, I studied in Milan. Università Cattolica. So I also brought my friends to the games. And they were like, wait, where are we? In Tel Aviv right now? I'm like, no, this is Milan, but this is Maccabi. This is one way with the thing is Maccabi.
So, I thought you were going to tell me your mom and dad brought you to the game or something, you know?
Nope, no, I went.
Hey, listen, each one of you guys, I know you guys got to get on planes, get out here. Jake, I know you got games coming up. I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you spending the time to be on the crossover with me. Denis, Jake, Nico, thank you so much. You guys are awesome. And from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate you making my program even that much better.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
See you tomorrow, huh?
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.